Perhaps the film Ivan the Terrible is closer to the horror genre than has been recognized. It's as mysterious to the American eye and mind as Kabuki, to which it is often compared. Perhaps I shouldn't be so general. Perhaps I should only say to my eye and mind. But whenever I ask people who love it to explain to me what it's about, they come up with some rather mysterious answers. It's almost like asking them why they think KPFA is so great. I've been so subdued on this broadcast, it's really just because I have a sore throat. I bet you thought I was going to go a full half hour without any cracks about this station. Yesterday, a baffled listener sent me some rather curious correspondence. A copy of a letter this listener had sent to KPFA, and with it, Trevor Thomas' response. The listener had asked, I quote in part, I like the idea of a non-commercial radio station broadcasting programs, many of which one would not be able to hear on commercial radio. I am currently a subscriber and have been intermittently over the last 10 years, but I am getting more and more fed up with the guff you keep feeding us. Miss Kale's startling 5 minutes on Sunday were the first encouraging sign I have seen on KPFA in some time. Let's hope they lead to some genuine discussion of the issues raised and of some that should have been raised and weren't. You could have a really great station if you weren't so convinced that you already had it. If this is our station, how about some information about it instead of all the self-congratulation? Who runs it, why, and how? Who decides on programs and on what basis? Who hires and fires? Who determines the annual budget? What is the background and training of the various members of the staff? For that matter, how does one go about getting a job at KPFA? If, on the other hand, this is not our, the listener's, station, and these questions are none of our business, on what basis are you asking us for money? Here is Trevor Thomas' reply in toto. Some of the questions you raise in your letter of October 19th are answered in the enclosed pamphlet. The mistakes we make are those of the staff, but any program person or listener who asks questions will get a response if it is at all possible. One of the big frustrations is the inability to deal with many hundreds of ideas and literally thousands of letters over the year. It would take a minimum of 2 full-time staff people to concentrate on the research and consideration to deal conscientiously with each of these letters and or suggestions. Yet many of them are important, and certainly most important to the people who took the time to formulate them. You ask on what basis we ask you for money. There is only one, and that is if you think what is produced is worth hearing. We are not a charity, but we are dependent upon the listener both for sustenance and for encouragement and criticism. End quote. If that isn't double talk worthy of a congressman addressing a constituent, what is? Surely this deadening evasiveness toward suggestions and criticism may help to explain why after 13 years KPFA has fewer than 8,000 subscribers. Incidentally, the assumption of the staff that thousands of people with FM sets who don't subscribe listen may be unwarranted. When you consider how dull much of the programming is, a casual listener would have to be practically a martyr to keep the station on in the hopes of getting something that interested him. It's apparently impossible to make a suggestion without a counter-request for money. I don't understand how it can be done with a straight face, but the announcers frequently tell you that if you will give them more money, they will get better programs. But as they don't pay for the occasional lectures or for program participants or commentators, I can't see why it should cost them any more to go after the best people instead of accepting so many time fillers. Anthony Boucher and Philip Elwood don't cost any more than the dithering discussions. It's the same straight face with which Trevor Thomas tells this listener that it would take a minimum of 2 full-time staff people to deal with suggestions. I'd like to know what the acting president and the executive vice president do if it is necessary for 2 other guys to be hired to do the thinking. By the way, the pamphlet Trevor Thomas enclosed in a true blue binding opens with a lovely statement. I quote in part, increasingly inquiries come to my desk from people in other communities. When will we have a Pacifica station in our area? Or how do we begin? In 13 years of broadcasting, we have determined conclusively that there is an audience that will support free radio, free to express any shade of responsible opinion, free to explore familiar and new channels of artistic creativity. So, in answer to these inquiries, it is difficult but with dedication and ingenuity it is possible," end quote. I have been asked by a number of you what response I got from the station staff to my calling for a discussion of its policies, its failures, and possible remedies. The answer is nothing, nothing at all. Apparently they prefer to overlook the matter, as if I made a bad sound at the dinner table. And you, I suppose, will go on guiltily turning over your dollars to this station, feeling with each contribution that you're a better person for it. You're paying off the Liberal debt. You feel as if you're really doing something, even if nobody will tell you exactly what. It's all a big union of self-sacrificing, dedicated staff and self-sacrificial listeners, a kind of osmosis. They give you guilt, you give them money. And the more guilt they give you, the more you need to assuage your guilt by giving them money.
You've been listening to Movies, a biweekly program of review and comment by Pauline Kael. If you enjoyed her comments, you might like to mention the rebroadcast to your friends. That will be Monday evening on KPFK at 9:15 p.m. KPFA, her target for today, was the parent Pacifica station in Berkeley. If you have comments about KPFK, we suggest you write the station. Our address is KPFK, Los Angeles 38. Well, it sounds as though we're let me go ahead and read this. Most of our listeners know that the unusual nature of our programs is due almost exclusively to the fact that we're not subject to commercial pressure on KPFK. We have no sponsors. We can operate with this freedom because enough of our listeners value this program freedom enough to help pay for it. Our only income comes from our listeners. If you find KPFK important to you, perhaps because of Pauline Kael's program, then won't you become one of our subscribers? All we ask is $12 a year, and you receive our program folio, too. Our address is KPFK, Los Angeles 38. If you'd like to hear a sample of the kind of programming likely to be heard on KPFK, or introduce the station to your friends, we have an LP record called The Lively Air. Among the better-known names represented on the record are Herschel Bernardi, Celeste Holm, Hermione Gingold, Carl Sandburg, Peter Ustinov, and Bruno Walter, plus others. This arrived only 2 hours ago at KPFK from KPFA in Berkeley, however, so maybe next week we'll be lucky again. Here is Pauline Kael with another in her series of programs called Movies.
I am resolved to start the new year right. I don't want to carry over any unnecessary rancor from 1962, so let me discharge a few debts. I want to say a few words about a communication from a woman listener. She begins with, quote, "Miss Kael, I assume you aren't married. One uses that nasty, sharp bite in one's voice when one learns to care about others," end quote. Isn't it remarkable that women who used to pride themselves on their chastity are now just as complacently proud of their married status? They've read Freud, and they've not only got the idea that being married is healthier, more mature, they've also got the illusion that it improves their character. This lady is so concerned that I won't appreciate her full acceptance of femininity that she signs herself with her husband's name preceded by a Mrs. Why, if this Mrs. John Doe just signed herself Jane Doe, I might confuse her with one of those nasty virgins. I might not understand the warmth and depth of connubial experience out of which she writes. I wonder, Mrs. John Doe, in your reassuring, protective marital state, if you have considered that perhaps caring about others may bring a bite to the voice. And I wonder if you have considered how difficult it is for a woman in this Freudianized age, which turns out to be a new Victorian age in its attitude to the feminine mind, to show any intelligence without being accused of unnatural aggressivity, hateful vindictiveness, or at least lesbianism. The latter accusation is generally made by men who have had a rough time in an argument. They like to console themselves with the notion that the woman is semi-masculine. The new Freudianism goes beyond Victorianism in its placid assumption that a woman who uses her mind is trying to compete with men. It was bad enough for women who had brains to be considered freaks like talking dogs. Now it's leeringly assumed that they're trying to grow a penis, which any man will tell you is an accomplishment that puts canine conversation in the shade. Mrs. John Doe and her sisters who write me seem to interpret Freud to mean that intelligence, like a penis, is a male attribute. The true woman is supposed to be sweet and passive. She shouldn't argue or press an opinion or get excited about a judgment. Sex, or at least regulated marital sex, is supposed to act as a tranquilizer. In other words, the Freudianized female accepts that whole complex of passivity that the feminists battled against. Mrs. Doe, you know something? I don't mind sounding sharp, and I'll take my stand with those pre-Freudian feminists. And you know something else? I think you're probably so worried about not competing with male egos and those brilliant masculine intellects that you probably bore men to death. This lady who attacks me for being nasty and sharp goes on to say, quote, "I was extremely disappointed to hear your caustic speech on and about the radio station KPFA. It is unfortunate you were unable to get a liberal education, because that would have enabled you to know that a great many people have many fields of interest and would have saved you from displaying your ignorance on the matter," end quote. She incidentally displays her liberal education by spelling caustic C-O-S-T-I-C. And it is with some expense of spirit that I read this kind of communication. Should I try to counter my education, liberal and sexual, against hers? Should I explain that Pauline Kael is the name I was given at birth and that it does not reflect my marital vicissitudes, which might overcomplicate nomenclature? It is not really that I prefer to call myself Miss that bothers her or the other Mrs. Doe's. It is that I express ideas she doesn't like. If I call myself by three names like those lady poetesses in the Saturday Review of Literature, Mrs. Doe would still hate my guts. But significantly, she attacks me for being a Miss. Having become a Mrs., she has gained a moral superiority. For the modern woman, losing her virginity is a victory comparable to the Victorian woman's keeping hers. I'm happy for Mrs. Doe that she's got a husband, but in her defense of KPFA, she writes like a virgin mind. And is that really something to be happy about? Mrs. Doe, the happily, emotionally secure, mature, liberally educated, womanly woman, has her opposite number in the mail bag. Here is a letter from a manly man. I quote this letter in its entirety. "Dear Miss Kael, since you know so much about the art of the film, why don't you spend your time making it? But first you will need a pair of B blank 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 blank," end quote. Mr. Dodo, I use the repetition in honor of your two attributes. Movies are made and criticism is written by the use of intelligence, talent, taste, emotion, education, and discrimination. I suggest it is time you and your cohort stop thinking with your genital jewels. There is a standard answer to this old idiocy of, if you know so much about the art of the film, why don't you make movies? You don't have to lay an egg to know if it tastes good. And if it makes you feel better, I have worked making movies, and I wasn't hampered by any biological deficiencies. You may wonder why I take the time to answer letters of this sort. The reason is that these two examples, although cruder than most of the mail, simply carry to extremes the kind of thing so many of you write. And often it is those of you who seem most dedicated to defending KPFA who attack in this insultingly personal way. When I listened to Halleck Hoffman's appeal to the open-minded, intelligent KPFA listening body to constitute itself a company of people who are together, my first thought was, include me out. I have ample evidence on my desk that dedication to KPFA is often consistent with petty, nasty, closed-mindedness, and that if you challenge notions dear to these people, they do not answer at the level of ideas. I have, incidentally, been told by a member of the KPFA staff that I should limit my discussion to movies. In other words, it is all right for guests of the station to ask for money for the station. It is not all right to question how the money is raised and used, what the station's hiring policy is, nor what the power structure of the station is. And so, for the moment, to movies. Yojimbo is a glorious film. A comedy satire of force, as Kurosawa's great action epic, The Seven Samurai, was a poem of force.